Hello and welcome to Blast Processing, the official podcast of PixelVerdict.com. This is episode 92. I'm your host, Steve. With me is Mr. John Mercer, as usual.
Had my corporate takeover ended after last episode.
Yeah, he tried to usurp
I staged a coup and it didn't work.
Yeah, he staged a coup, but little did you realize that the bullets and AK-47s that you purchased from that Third World Army were all made out of paper mache. So, you know.
I blame Adam.
It's all Adam's fault. I mean, never trust a Torontonian.
No. I mean, I don't trust the people who, like, don't get snow days.
Exactly. Exactly. Never trust a man who doesn't curse. We'll kick it off, you know, the way we always do every week. Well, actually, no, you know what? First, before I kick it off, I'm going to say, John, in spite of the joking, thank you for pitch hitting last week. Thanks for picking up the hosting duties.
It was
greatly appreciated while I put in a marathon week and worked until, you know, late into the evening hours.
Put in a marathon week and played New Vegas late into the evening hours.
Yeah, I wish that's what I was doing. I actually didn't manage to turn on a system last week for more than about maybe an hour, which kind of sucked.
So between being husband, father, and manager of a store,
you know,
you had no time.
No, not really. And actually, I think even husband and father kind of went out the window last week.
Oh!
It was one of those weeks, you know? I saw the kids in the morning. They get out the door to school and stuff. I saw them then, but, you know, by the time I got home, everybody was in bed. So I was coming home to an empty house every night, and it was just like, it was weird. It was a strange week. But enough about me. What have you been playing this week, John?
Well, let's see. On my docket, played a little more Marvel Capcom 3. Finally managed to take down the last boss. Yeah. no applause there. The biggest one for me the week, though, is I finally got the time to pull off the cellophane and dig into Dragon Quest VI on the DS.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I figured, you know, seeing as, what are we, mere weeks away from the launch of the 3DS?
March 27th?
Yeah, so about a month. I think you're right. We're about a month. And, you know, the DS has been, in recent years anyway, has been a great little system for, you know, these old-school JRPGs. And I'm a bit of a Dragon Quest fan, you know, to the point where I go back so far that I still sometimes call it Dragon Warrior.
You better.
Go into the store and ask if they got Dragon Warrior. In between asking for or trying to spell out East for them. No, I gotta say, I wasn't so much disappointed in it, but I'll put it to you this way. Do you consider yourself a Dragon Quest fan?
Not entirely.
No, if you are a Dragon Quest fan, everything you love about Dragon Quest is in the game. If you're somebody who's just trying to get into the series, this is going to infuriate and terrify you at the same time.
Very good. This is the more non-linear, less narrative-driven Dragon Quest 2, isn't it?
No, this one here is actually it's a remake of the last one on the SNES.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
All right. Now it still has there's a little bit of non-linear gaming after you get through it. You know, you do like your opening prologue chapter, and then you get a whole bunch of kind of non-linear stuff. Kind of feels like a really early prototype of something like Dragon Age.
Okay.
You know, you got your opening chapter, and then you go out into the world, and you start gathering your party together and everything, and then once everyone's together, you got the big, massive final chapter.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's
you get the end game.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, a Dragon Quest end game is usually more than half the game length anyway.
Yeah, I guess.
Right, they were always like that.
Yeah.
But after the first one, anyway. But, you know, it's got all the stuff like the turn-based battles and the numerous random encounters. And once you get towards the end of the game, these encounters start to get really, really hard. So there's a lot of level grinding involved.
Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty impressed. You know, it's a portable RPG that's about 50 hours in length.
Nice.
And, you know, yeah, it was good. I had to give it a solid 3 out of 5. was just, you know, I like games like this, so I look at them with a pair of rose-tinted goggles on.
I hear you.
But, anyone coming into this series, it's very, very archaic feeling.
Kind of dated.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a game that came out in the early 90s, right?
So is it like, do you have that whole first-person combat thing where all you're looking at is a picture of the enemy and scrolling text? Slime attacks Sir John. Slime hits for 2 points damage. Sir John.
No, they did something new with the battles in this time. It's still the first-person stuff.
Okay.
But they've got them all magnificently animated. All the enemies are, like, made out of multiple sprites, so they all got this really fluid movement.
Right on.
Right?
Cool.
And some of the attack animations are really cool.
I have... this is the most recent one they released for DS, right?
It is.
Okay, yeah, I have...
I believe you have number 9.
I have 2 other ones. I have number 9, and I have, like, another previous DS version.
Yeah, they redid 4, which was the last one on the Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah.
NES. I believe that one actually did get a North American release.
I think that's one. I think that's the one I have.
And then 5 and 6 were the two that never did make it over to Western shores. Did the original PS1 one ever get released?
The Dragon Quest 7?
Dragon Quest 7.
Yeah, yeah. It
actually,
did.
No, I do believe it was actually Dragon Warrior 7. I don't think they started calling it Dragon Quest until the PS2.
That one did get released, and I know that one, there was advertising in it for a PS1 version of Dragon Warrior 3, and that never happened.
Okay.
But I think we did have 2 of the DS remakes. I think we had 4 and maybe 5.
Yep. And now 6, finally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, with this, every one of the mainline Dragon Quest games has had its North American release now.
Yeah, I've got Dragon Quest 5, and I've got Dragon Quest 9.
Yeah. And, it's... if you're looking for an old school JRPG, it's great.
It's great. It doesn't get much better unless it says Final Fantasy.
Exactly, and anyone who's played the Dragon Quest game before is getting exactly what they want out of it. But it doesn't do much to bring in the new fans.
Yeah, I assume I kind of figured it was something that would be fan service only type of thing,
Yeah, now I will give it one thing. I'm not the biggest fan of Toriyama's character in Monster Designs, but he almost pulled a Chrono Trigger. In this one, they're actually surprisingly well detailed.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think it was 9 I kind of liked his characters in.
Yeah, that kind of had the same vibe. He's kind of started to move beyond his late 80s.
They weren't all just people in karate geese.
Yeah. I mean, your hero's still got the spiky hair, but I honestly think that's a joke to him now.
Oh, it could. If it's not, it should be.
Yeah, I think that's just... I think that's just something he does.
I think if he's not self-aware, painfully self-aware by now, then he must have the hugest ego on the planet.
Yeah.
And he is Japanese, so doesn't ego and Japan go hand in hand or something anyway? Aren't they like the polar opposite of the British?
I'm not sure.
Or are they even more downtrodden than the British?
It all depends. I mean, you look at a couple different people. You got Douchebag from Team Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
Super douche.
Yeah, Itagaki or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that man's got an ego.
He's a rock star.
Yeah. And you got the poor dude from who just left Capcom.
Mikami? Was it?
No, not Mikami. No, the creator of Mega Man.
Oh,
I'm going to punch myself later for not remembering his name.
Yeah, you're listening to about a video game podcast where we have forgotten the creator of Mega Man's name.
Yeah. All the hardcore is going to be I'm going to get...
You guys are posers!
Voicemail, they're going to be lisping at me furiously. Through their braces and Cheetos.
Oh, that's just... wow. That's hard.
Baby, don't be so mean. But, no, this
pick
guy...
Pick up your Mountain Dews. Stop typing the hate mail.
What you doing, hater? Stop hating. besides that, I only recently got back from the rental store. I didn't, daddy stuff today, so I didn't get to... get out and pick up my copy of Killzone 2 and my copy of Bulletstorm until about 20 minutes before we started recording.
Gotcha.
So I haven't actually gotten to play them yet. But I did play another couple hours of Borderlands. I guess that's kind of like Bulletstorm.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Okay. I can think of no better segue.
Very good.
What have you been playing this week?
Last week I played nothing, of course, but I did the weekend manage to get a little bit of game time in. I did take the plastic off of Killzone 3, a little, you know, relatively obscure
indie title.
Indie PlayStation 3 title that, everybody knows the hype over Killzone 2, that first trailer and how the game came out, and some would argue that it looked better than this first proof of concept trailer that they released. I am in agreement with that idea myself, but, you know, other people say, oh, it never looked as good, and it was on all pure hype or whatever, but regardless of that fact, I mean, the review scores speak for themselves. Killzone 2 was a phenomenal first-person shooter, one of the absolute best first-person shooters of this or any shooter generation. If you want to argue that fact, you're wrong. There's just, you know...
Stop lisping through your Cheetos and your braces.
Put down your Xbox 360 controller, mute your headset, log out of Call of Duty, you know, it's, I mean, the only thing that Killzone doesn't have that the competitors do have is that social aspect of, like, that just makes everybody have to play it. You know, Killzone 2 was not the social juggernaut that Call of Duty Modern Warfare was, so, you know, no, it didn't generate the same fervor. But it is, in every way, shape, and form, a better playing and more enjoyable single-player first-person shooter experience. Killzone 3 takes that ball and runs with it. Like, it is just a non-stop collection of pure, unmitigated, concentrated awesome. It is spectacle after spectacle. It's just... Right from the get-go, I mean, they play with non-linear time. You know, the narrative is not exactly what I'd call the most conventional. But, you know, you get a really cool level, and then you kind of get a flashback to the very end of the second game, and it just picks up right where the second game left off and just hits the ground running. And,
but
man,
love that when, don't people love that when, you know, it happened in Modern Warfare and Quentin Tarantino does it?
Yeah, I don't know, I guess so. But, you know, for me personally, this game has been... For the few hours I've spent with it, immensely, immensely satisfying. Everything I wanted from a sequel to Killzone 2, and then some. It is a beautiful-looking game. Like, just the technical just showmanship that is on display is jaw-dropping. It is, I mean, filled to the brim with effects, explosions, and, I mean, this was, I mean, I believe... I may have mentioned it in the review for Killzone 2, which, by the way, was the very first review ever published on pixelverdict.com.
Go back and read it.
Yeah, if you want, you know, blast from the past, whatever. But I did state, I believe, in that review that as awesome-looking as the game was, the explosions were kind of weak. You know, like the smoke effects from explosions and stuff looked a little bit off, I guess is the word.
Completely. Yeah, and the flamethrower was a little bit limp, too.
Yeah. Like, just in general, particle effects kind of suffered, I think. But in Killzone 3, completely remedied. Like, this game is just, from top to bottom, a sheer visual stunner of a game. And it runs so damn smoothly. Like, I'm astounded by what these guys have accomplished on this hardware. I mean, it's obvious that Guerrilla built one hell of a capable engine and just knows this hardware inside and out, and we're able to deliver something that at least technically outstrips anything else this console generation as far as first-person shooters go. You know, like,
all the trailers leading up to its release, it just... Especially that last one, that launch trailer that just came out.
Yeah.
I mean, the game looks like it's dropping a visual shock and awe campaign.
It does. I mean, it is... B-52 bombers flying over Baghdad or something, you know, it really is a stunner of a game, and I mean, I don't know if it was because I was more in an RPG mindset or what, but I wasn't what I would call mega hyped for Killzone 3. I mean, I was interested in it because I did love Killzone 2, but I wasn't, you know, crossing off the days on the calendar until Killzone 3 showed up and whatever. You know, it wasn't a game that I was immensely excited for. It wasn't a game that I was sitting there biting my nails over, you know. But the moment I put it into PlayStation 3 and started playing, I was just like, oh, it was like coming back to an old friend. It was, you know, and just a fantastic, beautifully well put together game. And I think, you know, it stands easily with Killzone 2 as one of the single best shooters I've seen in this generation. And the multiplayer is also just an addictive, really well-implemented, awesome aspect of the gameplay. It doesn't feel like an afterthought. It doesn't ever feel, you know, like you're just kind of running through multiplayer motions. It doesn't feel phoned in. Like, I mean, I know this was a problem with Medal of Honor when it launched initially, that the multiplayer was kind of hacked together in less than 8 months. So, you know, they didn't really have a lot of time for spit and polish, so it kind of felt like the bastard offspring of Call of Duty and Battlefield Bad Company 2. But Killzone 3 feels like nothing. Like, you know, it feels like Killzone 3. And that to me, is one of the huge selling points of the game. You know, you want a different first-person shooter experience. You know, you want something that doesn't feel like Battlefield or like Call of Duty. Killzone 2, Killzone 3 are the answer. You know, I mean, basically they play like nothing else out there in the shooter market, and they look stunning doing so.
Now, multiplayer in Killzone 3. I was a big fan of Warzone mode. Yep. I know that's back.
Yep.
Are the maps on the same scale?
Huge.
Because Killzone 2 had some of the biggest multiplayer maps I've ever seen.
Mm.
And they felt like, you know, entire level sections.
The level design, man, like what's so cool about it, and I mean, Killzone 2 was like it, Killzone 3 borrows the same kind of concept. Instead of being like, you know, like Battlefield Bad Company or Bad Company 2, where you've got these sprawling, like just flat landscapes, which are awesome. I mean, not to knock Bad Company 2. I think Bad Company 2 is a phenomenal shooter. But these sprawling landscapes that you have, like these hilly, you know, you get your cover and your buildings that you can explode and whatever else. But with Killzone, everything is vertical. Everything moves upward. It's, you know, like towers and huge, like, industrial complexes that feel multi-stories tall. You know, like the steel mill from the beginning of RoboCop, you know? It's just really, like, the gameplay environments are... They're big, they're spread out, but they also move upward as well as across a landscape. So it really feels like a more substantial environment to just run around and shoot people in. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but, you know, it's beautifully well-engineered. You know, you can get high ground and take advantage of high ground. You know, it's a sniper's paradise, but at the same time, the way the game is set up, snipers can't exactly dominate a map. You know, it is a really well-balanced and really fun-to-play shooter. And the big change, the one that I really think should, you know, get more people to gravitate to it, really should get people to give it a try, was, I know a lot of people complained about with Killzone 2 how the physics were exaggerated a little more than what you expect in a typical first-person shooter. So, like, your weapon speed, like the speed of aiming and stuff, depended on the weight of the weapon you were carrying and stuff, which personally I thought was brilliant. I thought it was amazing. I thought it set the game apart even further from its competitors. But the response time for aiming and such like that has been tweaked significantly with Killzone 3. So the response field does feel a lot smoother, a lot faster. You know, the heavier weapons are a little more effective because you can kind of swing the barrel around a bit quicker, you know. But at the same time, it still feels like nothing else but Killzone. You know, you still feel like a 200-pound guy with 75 pounds of gear running through an environment. And you're never... You know, a bobbing camera with a machine gun barrel pasted onto it. You're never a skateboard with a machine gun gliding around a level. You always feel like a soldier. Like, the game just does a phenomenal job of putting you into the head of, you know, a fighting human rather than, you know, a moving camera.
Now, here's the big question that I'm sure has been on everyone's mind. Is there any Brian Cox?
There is Brian Cox. Not to spoil, but there is Brian Cox.
Beautiful.
I won't delve into any further, but, you know, he's there. He gets his props in the opening scene. He gets his little opening speech. It's great. It's I mean, overall, the game is thus far, definitely so far, I mean, it's only early, it's only February, but contender for sure. Game of the year contender for sure. I mean, this time last year we had Mass Effect 2, and I mean, you know how that turned out with me. That was my game of the year for 2010, and Killzone 3 is going to be definitely up there for 2011.
Pretty sweet.
The other thing I delved into was another somewhat high-profile first-person shooter that John mentioned briefly earlier, and that's not really Epic. People Can Fly, the guys behind the Painkiller franchise, Bulletstorm. I still haven't really formulated a solid opinion on Bulletstorm. I've played a few hours, I'm a few levels in, and I've cracked up laughing a few times, but not at what you would think, you know, like it. all of these skill shots and all of this kind of stuff. It just, it became so visually noisy watching my points tally up on screen. I ended up going into the options and turning them off. Thank God you could. Because it to me, it just detracted from, you know, the action of the game itself. It detracted from the shooting.
I did the same thing with, if I don't know if you remember, Vanquish had the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Point stuff. I ended up turning that off on that, too.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, to me, it's flashy, it's needless, and, you know, and especially with Bulletstorm, where Bulletstorm is concerned, I mean, I say what you want about narratives in first-person shooters. I mean, I know people did this Killzone 3 in reviews for the narrative. I had no problems with it. It gave me a perfect reason to pick up a weapon and play the game, you know? But
yeah.
Bulletstorm is much the same. Like, just the character interaction, the dialogue, and the plot are absurd as all hell, but also extremely entertaining. It's like a really hard R-rated version of Firefly or Serenity.
Actually, and you want to know something I lifted out of that? I think this is the fingerprint of the slightly more mature Cliff Bleszinski.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
No, man. Well, I don't... I just mean, like, the... I've heard that Bulletstorm's got the same type of... they put a little bit of effort into world-building.
They did, yeah.
Similar to Gears of War.
Yeah, they did. And it definitely wasn't something that was an afterthought. You know, they definitely didn't sit down and attempt to recreate Bizarre Creations. Was it the club a few years ago? Which was just, like, you know, run through a level and shoot stuff as fast as you can. And, I mean, Bulletstorm, the shooting...
In Bulletstorm's defense, in the club, I don't think you could light a man's asshole on fire.
No, you probably couldn't. And I mean, like, for Bulletstorm 2, I mean, the shooting does feel great. It's an Unreal 3-powered game, so, you know, it looks fairly nice. But where the game really pays off for me is every now and again you get these really epic moments where you get these gigantic, vehicles or creatures that pop up. And every time, it's just like, oh, shit. You know, like, whenever you see it, it's always pretty stunning. The weapons don't feel particularly great, but they're, like, I mean, they're there, they're solid, they get the job done, but I find it takes, like, 8 million rounds from an assault rifle to put someone down, and the other weapons are kind of... I guess it suffers a little from Ratchet and Clank syndrome, where the weapons are just so esoteric and so strange, so bizarre, that they're unintuitive to use.
But you pick one of the first two you get in the game and stick with it.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I mean, you know, the only weapon I've been using with any regularity is the standard issue, you know, beginning of the game, assault rifle.
Cool.
But, I mean, you know, it's good. It's fun. It's definitely a fun game. And, I mean, I can see people picking it up just for the skill shot aspect of it, piling scores together and that sort of thing. Me, personally, it's not my style of gameplay. I never did kind of go in for the instant gratification Tony Hawk combo style game playing. I always kind of preferred to, you know, to cruise through a story, no matter how cheesy or cliched it might be, and play it to the credits and, you know, put it on the shelf and maybe come back to it in a few weeks or a few months, whatever. And I do see myself doing that with Bulletstorm, because it does have kind of a cool... narrative flow, a little bit of narrative twist, and it does, like you said, it does have a little bit of that world-building aspect in there, where it does feel like there's, you know, there is a big picture and you're only a small part of it, which is kind of cool. But at the same time, I mean, it is absolute, utter chaos. It is, you know, it is as advertised. You shoot things, they explode, they do things in a very, very violent fashion, in a very over-the-top fashion, which is also entertaining. But that carries over to the dialogue and stuff as well. Like, the game is just, you know, hilariously on PC.
Okay. So, I'm just hoping the dialogue and it never gets quite as cheesy as more like 10 shitloads.
No. It's kind of borderline, I guess. But it's more subtle, sly winks and tongue-in-cheek humor, and it's very Firefly-ish, you know?
Cool.
You know, I can't remember the exact exchange, but you've got this, like, you know, this hayseed-style... tier 1 bearded, you know, space pirate with you at the beginning of the game, and you walk into a corridor and all of a sudden one of the doors gets busted in on your ship and all these angry natives start pouring in, and he starts saying stuff like, "You're like my regular lucky charm, boss. Lucky horseshoes fall out of your ass," and all this stuff, and of course he's being very sarcastic, right? But it was pretty funny. I did laugh, you know. I thought it was pretty cool. Steve Bloom does overact a little, though.
Well, he's Steve Bloom. That's what he does. And, I mean, you're looking at the character design. This guy looks like a cross... He looks like if Wolverine and Ben from Full Throttle had a kid. I mean, Steve Bloom is probably the only person who could have done this voice.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, there are times, particularly when he tries to get all, like, when the pathos comes in there, you know, when he tries to really kind of play up the emotion, that it feels really cheesy, and you almost...
No, he's incapable of that.
Yeah, you almost kind of cringe. Like, and there's a plot device really early on in the game where you've got this, you know, your token Asian space pirate guy is with you, this guy Ishii or whatever, and for some reason or another, you know, Gray or Grayson or whatever his name is, the main character, desperately wants to keep this guy alive. And every time anything sort of happens to him, all you hear is, Ishii, no! You know, and it, like, that gets old after about 2 minutes. You know, it just kind of wears on me, and I'm thinking to myself, I would have much rather spend the entire game with the Hayseed character.
That would have been pretty awesome.
Who was almost like kind of a, almost like, especially, you know, Adam Baldwin as Jane sort of character.
And I said, it would have been even better if they got Walt from Justified to do his voice.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, this sucks. Someone give me a gun.
When I get home, I'm going to do so much cocaine.
Cocaine. What time is it?
5 o'clock. Bitch raping time.
Oh, man, that's getting edited out. I was going to do What You Got Space, maybe, but...
Yeah, no, he would have been great. That would have been awesome.
That man is the greatest redneck I've ever seen.
He is. He is pretty cool.
He just, like, sweats ignorance.
But yeah, no, I mean, Bulletstorm, thumbs up. Definitely a thumbs up. But, I mean, coming out the same day as Killzone 3, I think that's a little... suicidal myself. I think it's a little, you know, counterproductive to be releasing the same day as Killzone 3.
Yeah.
I think that's Cliff kind of, you know, stretching his EP in a little too hard. Well, I think that's about it for me. Moving right along, we'll hit our rundown. It's been kind of a slow news week. I don't know if you saw much, John. I didn't see much, but I'll dart down the list here and see if anything tickled your funny bone. Minecraft clone coming to Xbox Indie Games. Called, what was it, Fortress Craft.
That's horrible.
Also coming to Xbox Indie Games, Lawsuit, the video game.
Hopefully they'll do a crossover with Capcom so we can have Phoenix Wright.
Phoenix Wright versus Litigation. I want to hear the Capcom announcer guy announce the title of that game. That'd be awesome. Bethesda, creators of Fallout 3, Oblivion, yada yada yada, is offering a huge honking prize pack to the lucky couple who gives birth to a babe on 11/11/11, the same day as Skyrim's release, and names the precious child Dorvakin. In an unrelated story, DEA agents are on a stakeout outside of Bethesda's offices. They say it's a training maneuver.
You know what else? I'm expecting on November 11th, the divorce rate in the United States is going to skyrocket. Explode.
I when I first read about it, I thought it was a big joke. And I believe they had an absolutely hilarious... disclaimer. I can see if I can dig it out here right quick.
Google magic. I'm gonna wiki that.
You gonna wiki that?
I'm gonna wiki that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem to want to work. But anyway, you know, it says something like something about, you know, the responsibility of ruining your child's life. And possibly ending in jail, you know. It was really funny.
Sweetness.
But yeah, I think it was a well-deserved disclaimer on that part. I mean, who's going to do that? This is video game.
We live in a world where people name their children James Tiberius.
Yeah, we live in a world where video game players are having children.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, what do we have so far on this site? Tim's little boy is Link.
Yeah,
Eric's got Chun-Li. I've got Zangief.
Yeah, Okay, here we go.
I believe you named both your two daughters Billy and Jimmy Lee.
Okay, here we go. Our man Pete Hines sends word that today, February 18th, is the ideal time to conceive if you're looking to roll a new character or child on Skyrim Day. 11-11-11. Just how exactly he learned this is worth pondering, but we'll take him at his word for the sake of amusing science. So, think you have the set point...
Is there a prize?
What's that?
Is there a prize?
Yes, there is a prize. So, you think you have the stat points in you to produce the perfect 8-pound dragon slayer? Like the wizened wizard he is, Pete is throwing down a casual quest, offering up an unknown reward to any couple adventurous enough to name their 11-11-11 born child, Dovahkiin. While it may be difficult to play Skyrim from the hospital, just think of how many late nights you'll have to lull your little dragonborn with Jeremy Sewell's soothing music. And with that, we have possibly doomed a child. I'd say this calls for a hefty disclaimer. Disclaimer. Any reward for completing this quest will not ultimately justify the potential teasing your child could and probably will endure over its lifespan. Bethesda Softworks is not responsible for your parenting. You may gain experience points for completing this quest, but you will not care at 3 a.m. on a work night. Completion of this quest may also result in decreased desire to play video games and or function as a human being. Consult with your friends before embarking on this quest. While it may not start in prison, it probably ends there.
Oh my! Although you know, when the kid grows up, I mean, he can join like a rock band and change his name to Dovo.
This is true, and actually, here's one of the prizes. Update: if anyone is seriously considering this, we've got a few ideas in mind for a collection of quest rewards. How's this for a shower gift? A Steam key that will grant you, and presumably Dovahkiin himself or herself, every ZeniMax Bethesda game, past, present and future, for life.
Elizabeth, get out here. On the table now. Oh God, she's actually calling me out.
Once your child eventually achieves cognition and grows old enough to play intense video games, we think it will agree that this key blows away a pink pleated onesie, and for the rest of the loot, we'll leave it as a surprise. But that's actually, you know, kind of a cool prize, I guess, if you really wanted to do that to your...
Yeah, but to name your kid Dovahkiin?
Yeah.
we have to have a baby on November 11th. I'm talking to my wife now, not Steve. Yeah. Shut up, Ken.
Oh, my. I think it's a hilarious idea, and I think that prize is awesome, but... No person in their of sane mind or body would possibly do something that irresponsible. Although, didn't Nicolas Cage name his son Kal-El?
He could have, but Nicolas Cage is also insane.
Kal-El must be in like junior high by now.
he should have another kid named after one of the characters from National Treasure.
No, I'll pass. Moving right along. Desire Creations, the house that Project Gotham Racing built, is no more. I don't know about anybody else, but I was saddened.
I'm always saddened to see a studio die.
Especially a good studio. And I mean, I just want to say, I called it. The day Activision purchased that studio, I said, give them 2 years. And they're gone.
Dude, you say that for every studio Activision purchases.
But how often am I wrong?
Actually, that is true.
It's their nature. They drive studios into the ground. First Guitar Hero, now Project Gotham. It's a shame.
What really drives me nuts with that is that company actually gone? What was it? NeverSoft? NeverSoft. Are they actually gone?
I don't
gone?
Think NeverSoft is gone. I haven't heard anything about NeverSoft closing, and if they did, I think it would be a pretty big deal.
I was going to say, isn't NeverSoft like... NeverSoft have been with Activision forever.
Yeah, these are the Tony Hawk guys.
Well, not only in their tenure with Activision, I believe they've had Tony Hawk, Spider-Man, and Guitar Hero.
Did they? Yeah, they did do Spider-Man. They did the PlayStation 1 Spider-Mans.
And the first couple PlayStation 2 Spider-Man games.
Yeah. And, of course, they also had Gun, which was a huge hit, we all know.
Yeah.
Spawned billions of sequels. Didn't they do a Gun every year since? I think there were 14 Gun titles released last year, weren't there?
at least 20 different SKUs.
Yeah. Risen 2, Dark Waters, is announced. No one but Steve is excited. But boy, is Steve ever excited.
Was Risen the one that had the Dennis Hopper-looking guy in the loading screen?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The Dennis Hopper-looking guy who was voiced by Andy Serkis.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, anytime I hear about a new open-world RPG, I get excited, because, hey, I love open-world RPGs. And this is Risen 2. Risen was actually pretty damn good. And this one has pirates in it.
Wait, sorry, I thought we were talking about video games here.
It has pirates, and it's also called Dark Waters.
Speaking of pirates, is Captain Blood still coming out?
I don't think so.
God damn it.
That was supposed to come out in November.
That looked awesome.
We shall have to look into Captain Blood.
Wiking in it right now.
Two Worlds-related news, because John didn't talk about Two Worlds 2 last week. Two Worlds 3, due in 2012. Once again, Steve is excited. Two Worlds 2, UK and Australian releases, are in doubt. Sadness. For those guys, anyway. I got it already, so I don't care. Mass Effect 2, The Arrival. New DLC will be arriving. We don't know anything else. That's
I just can't wait to see the news post. Mass Effect 2, The Arrival arrives on...
Yeah. Eventually arriving on a console near you. So when you arrive home, or arrive at the store to buy a points card and then arrive home, and arrive on your PlayStation Network and download, or on Xbox Live, you can download The Arrival. I wonder if Charlie Sheen is going to be in it.
I don't think Charlie Sheen's going to be in anything except a bag of cocaine.
He's in rehab now. Oh, come on, give the guy a chance.
I suppose I should. He 10 years from now, he might be the next Robert Downey Jr.
He could be. He could be. Well, isn't he like old? No, maybe not older than Robert Downey. Who knows? Final Fantasy III coming to iPhone. That's kind of exciting, I guess, if you have an iPhone. Hey, Square.
I don't have an iPhone.
Hey, Square, how about a little Android love? Wait, that didn't come out right.
I'm pretty sure the one of the Final Fantasy 13 games is going to have Android love in it.
They've
done everything else weird.
I wouldn't doubt. I wouldn't doubt for a second. Red Faction Armageddon, the third or the what, fifth, eighth game in the Red Faction series? Fourth game in the Red Faction series is confirmed for May 31st release in the United States and I guess other parts of the world shortly thereafter or shortly before. It will also be accompanied by Red Faction Origins, which is a live-action sci-fi feature film / backdoor pilot. Backdoor pilot. Coming in May as well. Ordinarily, a sci-fi feature film would not excite me, but they've got a pretty cool cast put together.
But backdoor pilots definitely excite me.
Backdoor pilots are always great. But no, they've got a pretty cool cast put together, including, I believe, Robert Patrick is in there. What else we got? I think that's about it. Robert Patrick, hey. The only one worth talking about. But it is actually being directed by, I believe it's a guy named Michael Miner, who worked on a lot of Battlestar Galactica episodes, and they've also got a few like the production designers, some of the, like the crew from Battlestar are involved. So this may be a little better than your typical, you know, crappy sci-fi original movie. And hey, it may end up being a TV series based on a video game that might actually be good. Who knew?
I can't wait for this to come out, and I'm going to be the only person to realize that all they did is rebroadcast an episode of The Outer Limits.
What, Red Faction?
Yeah.
No, man, they'll just take Total Recall and show it.
Superimposing Robert Patrick.
Yeah.
He's worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger before.
There you go.
Why is that Martian dressed like a cop? Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Have you seen this boy? The latest PSM3, which is a UK magazine, goes on sale, I believe, next week and has the public's first hands-on with Team Ico's The Last Guardian.
It exists.
It exists. It is real, and it is coming. Apparently, it shares a lot of similarities with Ico rather than Shadow of the Colossus, or Ico, however you want to pronounce it. But, hey, it's real, and it's substance. It leads me to believe that the fall 2011 release date might actually be accurate.
No, I probably did lose a bit of money there, because I'm pretty sure I bet Adam a couple of weeks ago that this, when this game actually came, if a demo was released, it wasn't coming on PlayStation Store or in a magazine. A monk was actually going to walk down from the mountains.
Well, I mean, it's not actually a demo. It's not actually a playable demo, but it's like the magazine themselves got to play it and, you know, write up a hands-on preview type of thing. So don't get too excited.
Oh, that's cheating.
Yeah, you know. They go hands-on. They get to...
On the backdoor pilot.
On the back door. With a little Android love.
Yeah.
Last, but certainly, well, actually, you know, maybe least.
Hopefully least.
Scott Pilgrim could have been a Telltale-developed point-and-click adventure game. Let me just say what's on my mind. F you, Ubisoft. F you. I don't know if anybody else has played Telltale adventure games, but, well, I mean, Back to the Future was freaking awesome.
Oh, wait, I was thinking Traveler's Tales here. I was like, wait a minute, those guys suck.
No, Telltale. You know, Sam and Max.
Okay.
Monkey Island Chronicles.
I would have definitely taken that over
a crappy, lousy 8-bit beat-em-up.
Yeah. With a soundtrack with a video game attached.
Yeah, basically.
Cheat tunes. It wasn't even chip tunes. There was real instruments in there.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there were.
That's extremely lame.
It is.
Moving on to our final segment, in honor of... I don't know, in honor of what, really?
I don't know, but I think in the background I just heard you pour a drink in its honor.
I just took a swig of a drink in its honor.
Tipped a bit of beer under the floor. It's for my brothers.
In honor of, we'll say, the shuddering, or in loving memory of the shuddering of Bizarre Creations, I'm going to ask John. John, what studio death really affected you? What? I mean, in recent years, we've had how many millions of studios just suddenly roll over and die? And what one did really blindsided you? What one did you totally not see coming and just kind of think, huh?
Tell you the truth, I really don't know.
No? You got nothing?
I'm going to have to give a really lame answer, because I think I was the only person in the world who enjoyed their earlier stuff.
I know exactly who you're going to say.
I was kind of sad to see Loxaflux go.
Okay, no, that's not who I thought you were going to say.
What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to go for Clover right away.
Oh, God, no, but they're still alive, though.
Yes.
Clover became Seed, became Platinum.
Yeah, but not the same studio.
On the third day, they walked out of the cave.
Okay, let's go.
And I mean, they're still making the... Are Treasure still around?
I believe so. I believe Treasure.
Okay, it'd be sad to see Treasure. No, but I was kind of sad to see the way Loxaflux went out. You know, I thought in the glut of car combat games, I thought Vigilante 8 was probably the best of them.
Vigilante 8 is pretty awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, you're looking at, like, I really didn't think Twisted Metal was as great as everyone made it out to be. And but, I mean, it gets a bit of a pass because it was really the first, if you don't count Carmageddon. But, no, I enjoyed Vigilante 8, and you know what? I enjoyed the sequel, and I kind of enjoyed the original True Crime for what it was. But, you know, I was kind of sad to see Loxaflux die after a horrible, wretched Transformers movie tie-in.
Was this Revenge of the Fallen, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Revenge of the Fallen.
And I remember people really being excited about the fact that they were doing Revenge of the Fallen.
Yeah, because it was a studio with a little bit of cred behind them, right?
Yeah.
And if you ask me the same question next year, I'm going to be extremely sad when we talk about how High Moon Studios shut down after their movie tie-in for Dark of the Moon.
Ooh, well, you know, we can only hope. Are they actually owned by Activision, though?
I'm not sure. I'm going to wiki that now. I hope they're not, because I keep holding on to hope that eventually they're going to go back and give me that sequel to Dark Watch.
There you go.
What about you? What kind of studios are you sad to see gone?
I think there were a few that kind of, you know, hit me. No, I won't say they hit me
hard. They are owned by Activision.
They are owned by Activision?
They are owned by Activision.
Wow, that sucks.
They went independent for 1 year. That's when they made Dark Watch. Before that, they were Sammy.
That's right, they were the American Sammy studio.
Yeah. Then they were, after they went independent, they were acquired by Vivendi and are now owned by Activision Blizzard.
That's
bad. You know, they kind of riding high from that War for Cybertron game.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, War for Cybertron is, what, less than a year old?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they've basically had to crank out Dark of the Moon in record time. This does not bode well, my friend.
Never get my I'm never getting my Cowboys and Vampires sequel.
Alas. I keep going back to, I always kind of considered them an underdog studio. I always kind of considered them, you know, they had a great pedigree. It was a bunch of guys from Rare who split off, I mean, including most of the creative team of GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. Of course, I'm talking about Free Radical Design. They were, you know, I mean, they had Time Splitters, which the first game was kind of more of like a proof of concept than an actual fully fleshed out game. But Time Splitters 2 and Time Splitters Future Perfect were both really awesome, you know, fun first-person shooters that kind of, they had, you could tell they had a little bit of GoldenEye's DNA in there, but they felt evolved to, you know, the PlayStation 2 generation of shooters. So they did kind of change with the times. They stayed, you know, at the forefront. I mean, when games like Red Faction and Medal of Honor Frontline were bringing dual analog control into the, like, you know, the first-person shooter market in a big way, Free Radical had already done it with Time Splitters. You know, they'd already kind of created that perfect console shooter control scheme, and they never really got any credit for it.
Oh, my.
John's just been assassinated.
Yeah, I just had a ninja drop a lathe string down from the ceiling and dump poison in my mouth.
But yeah, you know, I know Time Splitters was great. They were pretty fun games, and as much as it became kind of the whipping boy of, you know, print medium and internet critics, Haze wasn't completely terrible. Haze was not a terrible game. Haze was,
I don't know, dude. I put Haze in the same pails. I put stuff like, you know, Dark Watch and Time Shift. And
yeah, it was a middle of the road first person shooter when hype had dictated.
That crawl shooting game you loved.
What's that?
What was that that game you loved that I thought was started out as the video game adaptation of Crawl?
Oh, Dark Sector.
Dark Sector. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was that kind of a game, you know. And I think the big thing that hit Haze was, I think initially when it was first shown off, it got a lot of comparisons to Crysis, and any game that was going toe-to-toe with Crysis was in trouble, especially, you know, a console title. And on top of that, it was kind of, you know, built up by the press, by advertising and that sort of thing to be, you know, the great white hope for the PlayStation 3. You know, it was supposed to be their be-all, end-all first-person shooter because Killzone was nowhere in sight. And when it came out, you know, they got a middle-of-the-road first-person shooter. They got a pretty standard, fair, generic first-person shooter that played really well, had a solid single-player campaign, and a fairly entertaining multiplayer campaign. But it just wasn't what people were expecting. Hype had definitely kind of overshadowed the game, and from what I understand, it started as a pretty straightforward, you know, military shooter, and Ubisoft kind of came in and dictated to Free Radical that these changes had to be made, and it had to become more of like a science fiction-based property and that sort of thing. So things kind of changed drastically as development went on. It was kind of crippled by studio interference. And I think it's a shame that was the game that kind of brought Free Radical to an end.
You'll be happy to know they're not actually dead.
Well, they're part of Crytek now, which is kind of ironic because, you know, like I said, Haze did get a lot of comparison to Crysis initially, like when the first demos were shown at E3 and that sort of thing. It was shown the same year, I believe, that Crysis was first unveiled, and they both had similar settings with all the palm trees and whatnot. And I mean, hype initially for Haze was very, very high. And, I mean, I think it's great that Free Radical are still around to an extent, but, I mean, what they had in the works, I mean, you know, as everybody knows, I'm sure, they were working on Star Wars Battlefront 3, they were working on a new Time Splitters, and these games existed. These games were there in playable form. And I don't know about you, but the idea of Star Wars Battlefront using, like, Time Splitter-style character designs and whatnot, you know?
I enjoyed my Time Splitters.
I think that would have been an amazing bit of fun.
Especially in the, I believe it was the third game, they gave the main character a voice and made him sound exactly like Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I think that started with the second one. I'm not sure. I think it was the second one they kind of added a plot.
And they kind of had the Ronnie Indiana Jones joke that whenever he tried to use his catchphrase, time to split, someone would interrupt him.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I mean, I was sorry to see him go. I was sorry to see Free Radical go. And I mean, their leader, I can't remember his name, Dennis something, maybe. Dennis Doak or something like that. He was a pretty infectious guy. He had a lot of Doak. Yeah, there we go, David Doak. He had a lot of, he had a lot of good qualities. He was definitely, you know, into what he was doing. And I think he may still be with the company, but I'm not entirely sure. I remember reading that he'd left when everything kind of fell apart.
Maybe he and, was it Stuart Black?
Yeah.
On Black?
Yeah.
Maybe the two of them can hook up and make something.
I'd be down with that. I think that'd be fun. So with that, I'm going to leave it. I'm going to ask you fine people at home, you know, comment, leave some feedback. Let us know, you know, studios you saw shut down that you really, you know, were saddened by, you know, what, like, this industry is cutthroat at times, and a lot of people have kind of come and gone. Who do you miss?
Pour one in honor of Grin.
Yeah, there you go, Grin. I mean, I always wanted that Terminator Salvation sequel. But yeah, feel free to leave us some comment. You know, post it here on the site. Hit the comment button. Post away. Head over to DVDverdict.com. Post in our forums. Leave a comment there. We like feedback. We like emails, you know. Feel free. And be sure to tune in next week when I'm sure you'll hear John say...
You will live!
And that's it. We're gone.